What's the one thing you and Kate used to do before the podcast started? Like the handshake
thing?
Oh,
we did
like
the stupid three, handshake
two,
thing.
One.
That I don't want
to
talk
we're
about
We're going
it.
To the World Series!
We just got to roll that clip for our blooper. Yeah. Roll Tide.
Roll clip.
Roll credits.
It's like roll tape, and the episode starts
now.
Pfeiffer Hall in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. The Frozen Hour is back for the spring 2025 semester. A lot of excitement around the podcast to talk about, a lot of excitement around the women's hockey team to discuss. Another odd topic that should be set to maybe be a barn burner, maybe it'll be basic, who knows, but excited to be with you as always. Welcome to everyone watching or listening around the world. I'm Spencer Thompson, joined by Preston McElhaney. Will Morrow, proud to be with you in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Hen Alpern is sick today. Wishing her all the best as she has her recovery. It's a lot of sickness going around, as is normal with the winter season. And Kate Aitchison also out. Hoping the best for the both of them. And we'll be sure to get them rotated throughout the rest of the year. But gentlemen, great to be back with you on the podcast desk. Feels like it's been a while. And I know we're going to talk about the USC series, Preston. But for us to be kind of back in the saddle and calling games right before the podcast and everything, I felt like I had a void of not having Preston back around me. I don't know if you feel the same way and vice versa, but how was your off season?
My off season was pretty good. It's nice to have like a little break in between things, but I felt like it was a little too long because we get back for the USC series and it's like, why does it feel like we haven't called a game in, you know, 4 months? But it's only been like several weeks. But it was nice to get back into the swing of things. South Carolina, that was a good game. And I think I just had a good time. What about you?
I think it actually was 4 months from the last time that we were calling games. I mean, we had the break because we had our last set of home games, I think, late September, maybe early October, because there was the USC games. And then November, there was the Columbus Classic, but we weren't there for. So I think you're right. It was like 4 months, but it felt like that time has kind of really passed by.
That's what 4 months does to your memory, guys. Yeah. It messes it up a little bit.
Yeah, at least a good holiday season for you and the family, at least.
Absolutely. Got this awesome Alabama hockey sweater.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a plug, but you know, you should support the team anyways and get one.
I think you said sweater. Isn't that a jersey, though?
It is a jersey. Okay. I say sweater because I wear it as a sweater.
Yeah.
I've been kind of on and off again wearing this as a jacket. My mom keeps going, you know, I got that for you, and you haven't taken it off one time. And it's like, yeah, because to me it's just a jacket. I guess to everyone else, it looks like I don't ever change my clothes. So
you hit the nail on the head with sweater.
Oh, yeah.
Old-timey hockey, they call them sweaters.
Not only that, Lucky Puck is front and center. We've now got the Lucky jersey because every time you've worn it at the arena, the women's team has won. So that, I think we add on to that Roll Tide roll, certainly. So now we've got two good luck charms on that front. Mr. Morrow, what about your offseason?
It was great, Spencer. Thank you for asking. I just saw a lot of watching my Islanders disappointment.
Yeah.
In and out, you know, third periods, but that's all right. It was nice to get a little bit of a rest, but it's good to see the ladies come out flying. Yeah. with this South Carolina series.
Yeah.
Absolutely, it's good to see the 2025s off to a good start.
Yeah, I don't think anyone on the women's team can share your sentiment of bad third periods, because I haven't seen a bad one from them this whole season. And
the New York Islanders, this team is not very much so.
Which NHL team would you compare this Alabama women's hockey team to right
that's
now?
That's a tough one.
Because I would equate them to the PWHL, but it hasn't launched yet. So the only thing we have right now is the NHL.
If I'm going with an NHL comparison in terms of this series, I would probably have to give them the Washington Capitals. High scoring, a lot of power from this team. They played very physically. They're getting results. Yeah. First and foremost, getting results.
And not just because we saw them a couple weeks ago at Bridgestone
that helped,
Arena.
For sure. A little bit of recency bias.
Just a little bit, especially because you see the comparison of the Preds. Would you say the Preds are more like the Islanders right now, probably?
Oh, yeah, a little bit closer.
Just a little bit.
Except, but, you know, instead of disappointing in just the third period, it's the entire game.
Yeah. we obviously had our finale episode for the podcast and the fall semester about a couple months ago. I kept busy with a couple of broadcast gigs here and there, freelanced, got to decompress, go visit the family, and it was a decent off season. But then right when I was starting to get back into the swing of things and heading back here for the semester, I started thinking, I have so much I have to do. I don't know if you guys felt the same sentiment, especially because both of you are graduating this semester. I mean, same with me, but you guys have a full course load equivalent that you all are handling. So have you settled into the semester yet?
Absolutely. I have only one class I'm taking, so it's kind of like
my So not full load. He's not even part-time. He's just kind of has it on the back burner, but this guy's on the full load. He's
going to say it's going to hear someone settling in.
Yeah. He's got the full load course load of semester touch. You can't see it from here. The stress is starting to come through his eyes a little bit. Just a little bit when we're talking about class stuff, but good off season thus far for us, or good off season that we had in this sort of break, and now we get back into the swing of things from a podcast side as well as the women's team side. And hard to believe it's all winding down. Feels like I was telling on air during the Friday game for USC, it felt like yesterday where we were in our media director Tanaya Sanders' apartment doing that media training with the broadcasting equipment, and it almost feels like yesterday when we were just getting here for the first ever episode of the Frozen Hour and everything. So, I mean, it's like you said, of your brain kind of plays tricks on you with the amount of time that passes by, but hard to believe things are winding down so quickly.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things that I really like about the season is how the games aren't all stacked on top of each other, but because of that, it feels like it makes the season feel so much longer than it actually is. And I'm looking on here, so late November actually was the last. Yeah, that was the Columbus Classic.
Yep.
And then, yeah, so you were right. October 19th was our last home game before the Carolina series. So having that big break for me in between all of it kind of just, man, I don't know. It really makes it feel like it's more than it actually is, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, well, especially because of how great of a team we've been privileged to watch throughout the duration of the season. So, well, let's get right into it. Well, this past weekend, the women's team was back in full swing after having a two-month break from their 2-1 record in the rescheduled Columbus Classic in November, and they got to still have practices leading up and through final exams and dead week, but not really showing any signs of rust in terms of their games against USC, and that certainly was the case on Friday evening with a 6-2 victory against the University of South Carolina Gamecocks. And when you look at the box score, that will 2-0, 3-1, 1-1, and we were talking about this beforehand of the kind of stuff you wanted to highlight, and I was even told Preston when we walked in, he just made one mention of Claire Carson, and we all started going into a rant because as a freshman, it's hard enough getting adjusted in the collegiate scene. And I love the piece that one of the local media outlets did for the Women in Sports Night on Friday, talking about how Claire didn't even know there was a hockey team here on campus, and for her to go in full swings. And there's a big reason why she's leading College Hockey South in points and is still in that potential contention for total goal lead for College Hockey South. And big reason for it is the performances like she had on Friday night.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she came out flying first period, quick assist, and that's been the story of her year. Even without the goals lead, she does lead College Hockey South in points, which, you know, a lot of that comes from those assists. She's a team player, makes things happen. And then two goals in that second period to really extend that lead for the Frozen Tide. It's absolutely, you know, that game is a microcosm of her season as a whole. I highlighted it the last time I was on this show, her ability to make plays and to make things happen, not just for herself, but for everyone on the ice around her. Absolutely, team player. It's great to see her succeed as well as she has, especially as a freshman.
And one player we don't call as much because I like that she's got the stats for it and backs it up, but one of the players we don't really mention as much as we probably should is Morgan Grzybowski. I mean, first goal in team history, and then first goal against South Carolina on Friday night. Ended up having one goal and then one assist later on in the second period to help Carson later in the second. And not only that, but you also had Naomi Dirksen, who scored a goal in the second period. And technically, they credited Claire Carson's second period first goal with the game-winning goal. But Grzybowski, we talked about how she is as kind as can be off the ice, but I remember looking throughout this week at Sears, and there were times where she was shoving people down and getting really aggressive there in Pelham.
Yeah, and then like that's like the story every game, right? So we say that Morgan Grzybowski, you know, first team goal and all that stuff. I think the first is something we love to say about Grzybowski because she is almost always the first to score in just about every game. And when she does, it's usually within the first couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Like the period starts and she is straight to the net. And she is just one of those people you have to watch every single game because she will start getting chippy and she will start, you know, taking souls every single game. But that's the beauty of it. And she's one of the more fun ones to watch because of that aspect. Because, mm-hmm. you know, there's kind of this sense of sportsmanship in college hockey, yep. right? You know, you can't just throw hands with people. That's not how that works. But I think Grzybowski has just enough edge to where it's like, all right, I see you. You
know? I think that's absolutely right. And it might be one of our future guests here on the Frozen Hour if we can get Morgan and get the scheduling right to bring her on at some point. I mentioned Naomi Dirksen also got a goal in that first period. And they were leading 2-0, which seemed to mirror a little bit of their series in Irmo, South Carolina earlier in the school year, and then Aria Dominique assisted by Quincy Hurley with the fight back on the 2-1 advantage, and then Carson coming right back within just under 60 seconds to kind of put that statement on there to say we're good here. Samantha Lance getting a power play goal in the second period too with Sohorchak on the assist there, and it almost feels like when anytime you go down by two goals or more against this Alabama team, you're not really coming back. The only situation we saw that was in the High Point series in their first game because Hannah Frost was just getting angry and going on a tear on the wings. But for at least for most of the teams in College Hockey South, it's really difficult to come back against this Frozen Tide team.
Oh, absolutely. And there are such a thing as bad leads, of course, in hockey. There are leads that, you know, put a little more of a pressure on the defense, stuff like that. But in terms of, sorry, could you repeat the question, Spencer?
Well, it wasn't even a question. It's just the idea of it's really difficult with this, with anybody in College Hockey South. They really haven't been able come back when they're at a deficit to the Frozen Tide.
Absolutely. And it speaks to that physicality, of course. We put pressure on our opponents. We play hard in and out of these periods. And there's no foot off of the gas with this team. They are playing hard through every single period. The third periods, as we've talked about, have been tough. They've been tight in scoring, but yeah, absolutely. We never take our foot off the gas here.
Yeah, and you're right about that tight scoring. It took a power play in the third period for the Gamecocks to get back onto the board with Avery Bowen assisted by Elwell and McAllernay for getting their goal there, and then Lance scoring a goal with Scott with assist with only 8 seconds left in the game, too. But at that point, the game was essentially decided. First game, great statement. And it seemed to mirror, too, what Alabama struggled with on the road with South Carolina. And if I'm not mistaken, the Gamecocks also traveled that same day getting into Pelham, just like the Frozen Tide did. And it's again, as assistant coach Tebby told us, it's the bus legs that really affect them. And that seemed to really affect the Gamecocks in that first performance.
Yeah, and we kind of saw more evidence of that in the second game because it was a way tighter contest.
Oh, yeah.
South Carolina, I want to give a lot of credit to Mackenzie Cronin, the goaltender.
Gamecocks.
Oh, man. It was so hard getting around her. So anytime there was a one-on-one opportunity, it wasn't going to work. There was a lot of, you know, hoping she would pad the puck and then just kind of maybe crowding around the goal and just tapping it in, finding those small openings. But that was kind of the only opportunity you had. I know in the first game there were a few that slipped by her. But in that second one, she was standing on business.
I tell you, the amount of times where I had to continue to like take a breath and refocus from one pad save, two pad save, three pad saves with so many players crashing the net and trying to find an outlet through the pads to get the puck in the back of the net was just incredible. And especially, we mentioned it on the air, their starting goaltender had graduated in December in Kelly Ahern. So big shoes for the freshman to fill. And I don't think, as long as she stays at South Carolina, the Gamecocks do not have an issue on the goaltending front.
Absolutely not, no. She's really good. Like I said, I think the bus legs definitely did kind of affect that first one. Because, we've been there. We get it.
Yeah.
So it's like, our girls have kind of gone through the same process.
Yep.
So seeing them have that first game, it ended with us scoring a lot more. But none of us left the game going, oh, our girls got this. No, we left the game going, okay, they're going to come back tomorrow trying really hard. So I think that second game was a more accurate measurement of where these two teams are at.
Yep.
And I think it was a very fun contest and absolutely great goaltending from Cronin.
Yeah, and it's only because of the minimal amount of games that the Gamecocks have played to this point or why they're in the number six seed position right now. And it's one of those, and certainly we could talk all we want about college football playoff and how the seedings seemed very imbalanced this year in the 12-team playoff, and you could certainly talk about that at the NFL level, the Commanders being the exception to that right now. But when you talk about teams that look like number one and number six, this could have very easily been, you know, it looks like one seed, two seed, what have you. It's just the way that things have fallen down to where South Carolina has not clinched a playoff spot, which we'll get into that talking about the CHS playoffs. But but very much from those two matches, looking like almost a championship caliber matchup. And I even said at the end of the second game, do not be surprised if you see these teams face off again in the CHS playoffs.
Absolutely. I mean, it speaks to the fact that they were able to slow this Frozen Tide team down as much as they were able to. Teams that build that much momentum in scoring, it's not even just like when the goals come with this Frozen Tide team, they come quickly and they come frequently. And the ability to slow that down to where they were, and obviously it speaks to the goaltender. They can absolutely compete. They can hang. I like using this Frozen Tide team as a metric for success because we've seen so much success this season.
Oh, yeah, and it's another factor of that as well with Friday night. How about the great job that Maddie Bloom and Mia Perez and company did with the women in sports night and honoring with the SGA getting involved and Girls Club and having that honor pregame on the ice for all those incredible colleagues that we get to work with every single day. But another one of those, you're bringing so many people together and celebrating such a big moment in women's hockey. It's just another sign of, again, we know, especially in this business, that not as many people know, it goes well beyond the dimensions of the rink or the court or the field, whatever you call it. And just another example there on Friday night of support not only for your colleagues, but also bringing the community together. And I think you were mentioning that's one of the bigger crowds we've had at a women's hockey game this season.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I loved the most about it was how many of the families of, like, the seniors and the girls and stuff were all there. And this was one of those really emotional nights because it was, oh, this is the last series.
You know? Yep.
This is the last big one for the year. So these people are going to be graduating from college, moving on with their life, and they're going to be thinking back, you know, oh, we were there for the inaugural debut of Alabama Women's Hockey. And I feel like the amount of effort that goes into creating something like that, absolutely impressive. Yeah. You know, you can't just wake up one morning, decide, hey, I'm going to create a club sport, and then just expect that to all go according to plan. So the fact that our people were able to create something so successful at starting here, not even just from an administrative level, but from an on-the-ice level, like even the success in the game, that's really impressive, and they deserve all the props for that.
Yeah, that's the challenge with anyone in marketing or PR in sports is that you can bring people to the stand, you can advertise things as well as you want, but you can't control the on-field or on-rink product, whatever you call it. And certainly it helps when you have the win to add on to those sort of things. And another special event from that weekend was senior night the following day, and the score of it had a little bit of people on their toes about trying to get the win there. You said it on air, Preston, that it felt way more like the second game of the High Point University series, and quite literally the same score on how that ended in 2-1. And you've been in tight games like this before throughout your high school career. Scoreless at the end of the first period. First time this season that Alabama has not scored in the first period, or their opponent has also not scored, because even in the High Point series they led 1-0 and then it went down through the rest of the second, and then 1-0 Alabama managed to lack of a better term and pardon the pun, break the ice, and they went up 1-0 at the end of the second, and then third period 1-1 it was tied, and then Alabama scoring within a couple minutes left to go in the game. First things first, no goals in the first period, but then towards the end of the second, Claire Carson again showing why she is leading College Hockey South in total points and why she's just a dominant force on the ice.
Oh, absolutely. Well, in terms of the tightness of the game, I have been in close games like this before. It's hard not to get into that if it ain't broke, don't fix it mindset after a scoreless period. Because if it is a scoreless period, something's broke. You got to get that production. Obviously, Claire Carson got the memo. Yep. A few of these, Sammy Lance got the memo. Not maybe in this particular game, but in terms of your scoring on the season and creating opportunities. But yeah, it's always nice to get that second period, that icebreaker goal, of course. But and it's been the story all season. Again, you can never get complacent. You can never lull into that rut of lack of scoring. You got to keep the pressure on, and this team's done a great job of that, keeping the foot on the gas.
Yeah, and Saber and Sineski assisting on that goal as well. So third period, things starting to get tight. South Carolina is pressuring. There are a lot of opportunities, a lot of chances there. Natalie Coots was fantastic in the net as well. We were talking about Cronin and how she was standing tall, especially on that second day. But on the other side as well, Natalie Coots was just incredible in net for the Frozen Tide.
Yeah, I really want to talk about her efforts in the very last few seconds of the game. Obviously, very controversial ending there with South Carolina scoring a goal, but it was just after the buzzer went off. So right after regulation, they don't get what would have sent it to an overtime period, and that's, games called. But right before that, of course, her efforts blocking it and making sure that it was staying beyond the crease, allowing that goal to not be taken off until after the clock expires. I think that's just a testament to how good her skills at being a clutch team player is. And she just did a phenomenal job in that one.
Yeah, and I'll get to that crazy ending in a second, but how about the PK Subban-like goal from Naomi Dirksen at the end from the blue line, unassisted, just saw a path to the net? I had to step back because I didn't even think that was going in. It looked like it was angled on the other side of the post, but Naomi Dirksen, especially on senior night, and she in her final year as a doctoral student in physics, like trying to shout out to the doctoral students who still do this kind of stuff in college. But for Naomi Dirksen to have that Subban like, and Coach Ani Laxon has posted continuously about how she loves Subban, and she was just at high praise for Naomi and getting that goal at the end of the game. But you gotta love it especially when someone on the defensive line from the blue line, and it wasn't even on the post on either of the corners of the blue line, like Subban does one vowel off on that, but Subban mostly had his goals from the corners of the blue line. Hers was in the middle, so even through traffic and a couple of screens moving around, able to get that as the game-winning goal too. Very good stuff.
Absolutely. It's a very, very difficult thing to do, especially at this level of hockey. It's not something you see a lot. Most of the scoring happens in the dirty areas, down under the crease. But, yeah, PK Subban is an awesome comparison to that goal. Big slap shot from the point. It's a very difficult thing to do, very difficult thing to get through that traffic and read those screens and such. But, yeah, to be able to make that happen is game-changing.
Oh, yeah. And so as we were getting to at the end, we were talking about how we were wondering when South Carolina was going to pull their goaltender at that point, because Naomi scored her goal with 5 minutes, 22 seconds left to go in the third. So you're wondering, usually coaches make the decision around 2 to 3 minutes to pull their goaltender, especially when you're down in that. Problem is Alabama's offense can easily get on a breakaway and could easily get a score, just shoot it down the length of the ice. But they waited until it was 50 seconds left in regulation where McEachern got the goal with an assist from Bowen and Mick Allernay. And that's when they pulled their goaltender finally and started pressuring on. And you mentioned it with Natalie Cutts and how she stood completely tall. And buzzer went off. You saw some celebration from the South Carolina players. But again, hockey rules, for those who don't know, right when the buzzer hits, it's not like basketball where you see where the puck goes at the end. It's wherever wherever the puck is when the horn sounds, it's over that point. And there was, for a brief moment, we thought maybe because they were celebrating, we were waiting on the officials, and it looked like they were talking, but looks like they made the final decision, at least from our vantage point. I know Annie was telling us when she hit the replay that it was at zero with the buzzer, was not past the blue line at that point. Now, they didn't have instant replay on that game, and even if they had, it wouldn't have made a difference on there. But it don't want to say it was a controversial ending because it was it seemed fairly cut and dry from our vantage point. But at least a credit to the Gamecocks for, even with less than 60 seconds left, at that point under 50 seconds, to put that pressure of six players crashing the net, in essence, and trying to find a way to force it to overtime to at least guarantee 1 point. And it would have given them a game-winning lead of 2 points against Miami. And now that you've got both of them fighting for that number six seed in the CHS playoffs, it makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, South Carolina did a really good job towards the end of that game. I think if they just pulled their goaltender just maybe a few 10, 15 seconds earlier, the outcome of that game probably changes dramatically. And I think it was really interesting that they did get in the net, and it didn't seem like they got in the net because, you know, Natalie Kutz was going, oh, the game's over, time to stop caring. You know, that's not what it felt like at all.
No.
If they genuinely got around her, it was just too late. And that is one of the things that I feel needs to be taken seriously when you're analyzing this Gamecocks team, because they are good. You know, that's not something that should be ignored. So I think going into the playoffs, they're going to be very successful. You've said it several times. Would not be surprised if South Carolina and Alabama rematched at any point.
Yep.
You know, this has been one of the kind of hidden rivalries of the season so far. I won't really say rivalry, but for the amount of times they've played, it kind of feels like it at this point.
Yeah, now the biggest challenge they're going to have, because if South Carolina gets that number six seed, with the way the bracket's structured, they'd be against the three seed, so they would have to likely match off against Tampa and get through them to get to the Frozen Tide in the second round. So a lot of ifs and dependencies and a lot of things have to fall their way to get to that point. But at least at this point, South Carolina and Miami are at 6 points and 5 points total and fighting for that playoff berth, in essence. And one more thing I want to make sure about Saturday night's game again. Senior night, got to honor all the seniors senior players and get to honor them. I think there was one senior who was absent. She was in D.C. on a trip, and I believe they're honoring her on February 1st with the scheduled game, and as we'll talk about that as well. But huge shout out to Mia Perez and all the team for putting together the senior night stuff. It was really cool when we got on site early enough, we set up our equipment, and we go down and we're starting to talk with the staff as we usually do. And Tegan Mathy, her parents brought, and she didn't even know until she saw there, it was her banners from her senior year for her high school. And having both of those, I think her high school and junior team, and they were just put up at a place in the arena. And she was understandably very emotional when she got to see that and such. Sure, you'd probably get a little bit emotional if you saw like your senior banners or such from your hockey days up there.
Still have it rolled up in my closet at home.
You don't display it proudly?
Is that up anywhere? Not the type of thing mom wants to hang in the kitchen, but you know.
That's good. That's completely fair. But a great senior night all around. They are doing one more staff senior night on February 1st. Which the game was initially supposed to be Georgia Southern for the full-on senior night. Georgia Southern ended up canceling, or I believe it was a mutual understanding that they both decided not to play that game. So right now there's a search for a potential opponent on that matchup. If not, it's going to be a scrimmage, and they're still going to honor the staff in that conclusion to the regular season. So we'll still be on call for that and broadcasting that one to make sure everybody gets one last taste of the women's hockey team before we get into the postseason. I love the quote. When I had my 1 year working with the University of Alabama Adapted Athletics team heading into the season, the assistant coach, Michael Operance, I asked him, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge? Because they were coming off of a men's national championship. And I asked him, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge for you all heading into the season? And he said, ourselves. So quite literally in a scrimmage, it might be the biggest challenge that the women's team have if they're going to be in a scrimmage against a red and white is what it would be. But it'll be interesting to see, even if it's a scrimmage, of how they face off against themselves. I wonder maybe if Grzybowski tones back her aggressiveness a little bit with her teammates.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at that point, you know, you say, oh, you know, that's a friend of mine. Maybe I don't want to accidentally end their career, you know, just in a scrimmage. But yeah, no. I think it's going to be a good game. Definitely going to test out the depth of the roster a little bit, because we're going to start seeing, you know, a few people we don't see as often, you know, coming in, making an opportunity for themselves potentially. I think this is going to be a great showing out. for the whole team. And like he said, you know, it is being broadcast. So, you know, if you guys want to see it, you know, definitely something that you can do. Black Dog Hockey, mm-hmm. it's going to be available to stream. But yeah, no, this is going to be a great test.
Yeah.
Because Alabama is one of the best teams in the country. And mm-hmm. when you take, you know, people from that team and pit them against each other, you create a unique situation. You know, there's not a lot of other teams doing, you know, mid-season scrimmages,
yeah.
you know, and stuff like that. So it's definitely going to be something for the girls to kind of reflect on. Like, hey, you know, you play this way. I counter the way you play by doing this. Maybe that's what our opponents do, you know. So you kind of get to step into the opponent's shoes a little bit and yeah. figure out, you know, potential reverse psychology, you know, techniques for your future opponent. So I think this is going to be a great opportunity for the team to kind of get in the right headspace going into the postseason.
Yeah, and one thing that he's very modest about that Preston did not mention for his offseason, congrats to Preston on getting a role as the beat writer for USA Hockey this offseason. Well-deserved. And you and I have been talking about this as well, in that you're assigned to cover a league up in New York, yes. or in that section. But from what you've seen, there's not really a better team than the Frozen Tide on the women's AAU collegiate hockey scene in your eyes.
Yeah, so the Upstate New York Conference is our other, you know, women's league that we have here in the United States. And I think when you start to think about it, because, you know, all of the big schools up north, you know, those are all NCAA schools.
Yeah.
You know, they play, you know, hockey, D1, you know, the big-time big leagues. So in AAU, what happens is you have a lot of lesser-known schools with less resources that end up in those predicaments. You come down to the South and all of your huge schools, you know, Alabama, your Georgias, yeah. your Texas, you know, all your stuff like that, they have a lot more resources to work with these club sports down here in the South. So it creates this kind of ironic twist where the Southern schools are way more dominant than the Northern ones, especially when you consider the fact that a lot of the roster members on, you know, the Southern schools, they're from Canada, they're
yeah.
from New York, they're from Michigan, you know, they have the experience. It's not like we're just assembling a bunch of, you know, overall wearing hillbillies and sending them out on the ice. You know, these are people that have the talent.
That might be good television to watch if we just throw a bunch of...
But yeah, so, I mean, I think Alabama absolutely has the potential to take it all the way just because of that factor alone. But that's not to say that this isn't a talented squad. This is a talented squad, and
yeah.
they compete against a lot of the best women in the country in this league, and they do a phenomenal job game in and game out. So I think they, you know, bias completely aside, I think they have full potential to take it all.
Not only that, there are only two teams that the Frozen Tide have lost to this year. South Carolina, which, depending on how AAU seeding works, I believe it might be the champion or top two teams from a certain conference get head to that tournament. Have to look more at the seedings to clarify that. The only other team they've lost to is Tampa. Per sources, per what I've heard, they're not headed to AAU Nationals. So Alabama might I think they're still going to be battle-tested, because when you go to a national tournament, you never take any team for granted. But I think it's still one of those where – what a storybook season thus far that's still being written.
Oh, absolutely. And, in terms of that not making it – them not appearing in the tournament as one of two teams that has taken out this Frozen mm-hmm. Tide, it's – it's not. I like your point that they're not going to be battle tested. It's playoff hockey. At the
yeah.
end of the day, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be physical. It's the most difficult way to find a win in sports.
Yeah.
Because everyone's playing wall to wall. They're playing as if it's the last game of the season they're going to play. They're more physical, and it's going to be difficult to out physical this Alabama team.
Yeah.
Might be a nice break for them to not have to face that Texas
sure.
again. It might be a little bit of pressure off, but, you know, not to your point, it's not going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah, and from all the conversations we've had with the assistant coaching staff, too, the two losses they had players missing. It's still at full strength. It's really difficult to see this team losing when they're in their full form. One last note I wanted to hit on, especially because, we can talk AAU Nationals all we want, but there's still a tournament in the way of that, and that's College Hockey South Playoffs, and upsets have happened before in it in just this short history of the women's standings, but certainly in the postseason upsets happen. Congratulations to the Frozen Tide on clinching a playoff berth, as well as You have South Florida, Tampa, Auburn, and Georgia have all clinched their postseason berths at this point. So it's a fight between South Carolina and Miami. South Carolina has 6 points. And as we mentioned, if they had forced that overtime game against Alabama, even if they lose, they would have a one-game lead against Miami Hurricanes. So at least on that front, there's still that sixth seed. A little bit of drama there. Tennessee could potentially clinch it, but they need a lot of help to get to that point with the remaining games they have on their schedule. But it'll be interesting to see, because we haven't seen Miami this year in the games that they've had. But it's still one of those where, yeah, South Carolina's 3-3. Miami's right now 2-6. They've played more games at this point on the season, but it's very intriguing to see what if South Carolina can get the job done and clinch that postseason berth, or if Miami sneaks into the playoffs.
Absolutely, and like one of the things I love the most about this league is that it almost feels like everybody is a contender all the time.
Oh yeah,
there might be, you know, some people that are losing every single game left and right. You know, that's not a direct shot. Please, no one take that as a direct shot.
It's a slap shot.
Yeah.
No, it's bad. The puns are bad today.
But yeah, so it always feels like there's a team lurking in the shadows that can just make the jump whenever enough games go one way or another. So I think this is going to be a really exciting playoff tree. I think Alabama, South Carolina, South Florida, these are going to be teams to definitely look out for in the coming weeks.
Oh yeah,
because it's going to be just so tightly competitive. And you mentioned, you know, not taking teams for granted, and you're right, you don't want to do that, because in this league the competition is tight. Alabama, yes, we might be having games where they're winning by, you know, 6-7 points. But, you know, when you're on a neutral side, everyone's been traveling. You don't know, like, what could happen. So, absolutely, I think this is going to be a really good one down the stretch.
Yeah, and it also helps with those tournaments on the neutral sites. They didn't count towards postseason seedings, because otherwise it may be a different story with Tampa winning against Alabama and winning the overall Columbus Classic. They could very well be in that number seed slot, which is the difference between a first-round bye and whether you have to play on that Thursday first-round game, which in total would be 3 games straight to win a College Hockey South Championship, which is certainly a challenge, but hasn't happened thus far in the women's division. Again, only the second year that it's been in existence, but at least as of now, it's just been one of the top 4 seeds advancing to the championship game. One thing we want to promote as well, we are doing a remote show of the Frozen Hour. That's going to be Monday, February 3rd. Should be around that 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. range. We're waiting to get word back on confirming a venue here in Tuscaloosa. We hope you'll join us for that. We'll be having on representatives, coaches, and players from the D3 men's Alabama team, the ACHA Division I men's team for the Frozen Tide, as well as the D1 College Hockey South team, and of course the women's Alabama team here at the University of Alabama. We'll also be joined by Lauren Dillon, representative from College Hockey South, their director of operations, to kind of preview the postseason for us and give some insights into the conference as we head into the postseason. And we'll have a slew of different people. Preston's going to be there. Pretty sure Will will be there. At least that's the plan. Kate Aitchison will be there with us. Theodore Fernandez, who's the voice of the ACHA and Division I CHS team, will be with us. May have some other on-air personalities mixed in here and there. It'll be a fun night. We're going to be at a venue that will have a fundraiser night to help with all the teams and everything. So block your calendars now and pay attention to the Frozen Hour social media pages as we will announce where that is going to be sooner than later. Should be a lot of fun. I'm excited to get back in a remote show. You know, it's fun being in here and recording at this venue because it's just stellar on the visual side. But when you get to go out into the community and you get to fundraise for Grow the Game, and we also get to, you know, talk with a whole bunch of people from the different hockey teams. It's especially because of CHS. That's the week of the D1 and women's playoffs in the same weekend, and then D2-3 2 weeks later, getting to talk to all those teams before they head to their respective playoff runs. It should be really fun to do that in the community. And I know that from the conversations we've had, we're all really excited about it.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're going to get some really good insight. It's going to be great to experience that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I know you're excited about it on your end as well, Preston.
Oh, yeah. I love doing, you know, anything with a microphone. I love being in remote places. I'm a very social person. I'm a very public person. So I think this is going to be a fun little event we set up.
Yeah, especially with your notability in Bryant-Denny Stadium as well. Well, we see the suit and the trilby. Will we see that out there for the remote show?
I don't know. If y'all want it, I'll gladly do it. I will gladly do it.
I wonder if maybe instead of a suit jacket, your jersey maybe goes over there. if that works.
Yeah, to celebrate the playoffs, we can maybe bring back the suit.
Oh, yeah. That would be fun. maybe not go as hard as you usually do at the football games in terms of, like, the volume and that kind of stuff. But like, it would fit the mood, though. You know, we need a hype man in between when we're changing scenes or whatever, so maybe get him on the microphone and just drop a few Roll Tides in a very passionate and not safe for television.
I'm cutting a WWE promo right into the mic, and the people walking outside of the pizza place are just like, "Hey, what's that guy doing?"
He's elbowing down a breakable table, and you just hear from the outside, "I'm in a metal chair. How did he do that?" So it is not WWE fundraiser night. It's Frozen Hour on location is what we're doing, but that would be a lot of fun. I feel like we would get a lot more money in fundraising if we managed to do that sort of thing. All right, time for the odd topic of the show. We had a little bit of a struggle coming up with this one for today, but I'm sure we're going to have some other ones that we'll come up with later on. So we are fans of college football, all three of us. Maybe Preston more so than me in terms of how passionate he is at Bryant Denny Stadium. And if you look at his Instagram stories and the kind of memes he shares for football, they're hilarious, but it's also one of those a lot more passionate than I am, I would say. And we are fans of the Pop-Tarts Bowl. The marketing department, once they made that switch, incredible. And now it's time for the odd topic. I know it's a month afterwards, but again, we kind of ran the well dry in terms of thinking of this, but the favorite Pop-Tarts flavor is what we're going to talk about today, and Preston, we'll start with you.
A toasted, unfrosted strawberry Pop-Tart.
Unfrosted is bold.
Yeah. Yeah, he's bold. I'm trying to remember which ESPN. There was one ESPN on air talent that said they loved the unfrosted strawberry one, and the rest of them said it was heathenous to enjoy the unfrosted stuff.
Yeah, I get a lot of flack for that one, but that's actually my favorite. I prefer my Pop-Tarts, you know, hot and not with frosting on them, so awesome.
I mean, it's also, I know Pop-Tarts are not healthy for you. They're not, like, good for you or something, but they're at least a little bit better for you in terms of when they're unfrosted because there's a little less sugar and everything. I'm sorry to break the news to you. There's a couple other things in our diets that are not healthy, as we know.
If our road trip snacks or any,
no,
any indication. Especially
not. But it's been a while since I've had the unfrosted Pop-Tarts, and I think from what I remember of them, it's that I just prefer the frosted ones. But you said the strawberry one specifically is yours?
Yeah, I mean, I like the unfrosted blueberry. I'll even eat a chocolate Pop-Tart. I mean, I love those too, but man, like just regular, like, strawberry Pop-Tarts, man, you better give me a bottle of Tums with that thing. my heart's going to be burning.
All right. Will told us when we decided this topic that his answer was going to be very basic, but I guess it's not going to be bold as his. So.
Oh, it's not nearly as bold. So basic, so classic. I'm going with the cinnamon brown sugar Pop-Tart.
That's a good one. No, it's a good one.
Toasted, untoasted, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to
no,
me.
No, yeah, it's a good one.
What's going on there?
Nah, just the sound of that made my
He's
heart.
He's judging you.
Yeah,
yeah, that old palpitation. You said.
Needed Tums, needs Pepto-Bismol, needs some ginger ale on standby. Apparently we got
open heart surgery.
Triple bypass over here, please.
Triple bypass. I need a quadruple bypass after that. Mine is like, I'm on the brown sugar cinnamon wave. I don't know if they still have it, but there was one that was frosted chocolatey chip pancake. That one was really good on the toasted side. They also had a frosted Boston cream donut, which I would have rather had a Boston cream
Where
donut.
Where was I when they were churning these? Yeah, I missed all
They were in the last year or two. They were with like last year.
I've been living under a rock, clearly.
Not looking at the right stores, probably, too. But it's, no, so those ones are both good. The weird one of the experimental ones, there's two of them that were okay, but just still, I would rather have the product instead of the flavor product. There was a frosted Eggo maple waffle Pop-Tart. So which is just basically, it's trying to taste like a waffle with maple syrup.
Would they just put a waffle in there?
No, it looked on the outside. It actually looked like it was a drizzle of maple syrup on top of it. It was shaped like a waffle, like the, what I'm trying to remember, what the geometry term. You just pull up, okay, for those who on the video screen. He just pulled up a variety pack of mustard, mayonnaise, and ketchup Pop-Tarts. I know that doesn't exist, but this is why we have Preston around, so he can get under our skin.
200 calories per Pop-Tart. That's, yeah, okay.
I was getting hungry, my appetite is gone.
And they come in two, so that's like that's almost 500 calories in one sitting. Oh, Preston. But probably I would say it's on the brown sugar cinnamon is where I usually go to. S'mores is really underrated. Like the s'mores one is really good. I don't
take a s'mores in a pinch.
Yeah, I don't know how much you've had them, but they're pretty good.
I like s'mores. There's so many of them. Like I do like they had pumpkin pie like during the fall.
I'm not as much a pumpkin guy. That's my thing. It's like the whole pumpkin spice this, pumpkin pie that. On Thanksgiving, pecan is my preferred one on those. I know some of them can get a little bit crunchy on that, but the pecan, or sometimes they have like chocolate fudge there. But and also, rule of thumb, if you can see your pie slice, you do not have enough Cool Whip on it. But that is a family rule. If
you
I get
pecan a pecan pie,
well, yes. If well,
I had to catch myself. You almost made me say pecan on this podcast.
You would have been judged and shunned out of here.
Yeah.
But no, on pecan pie, I actually do mine with like vanilla ice cream a little bit. But no, if like for pumpkin or cherry or any of those other Thanksgiving pies, if you could see your pie slice, you do not have enough Cool Whip on it. My dad and sister have taught me that.
Speaking of cherry, worst Pop-Tart flavor by far.
Haven't had it, so no, I wouldn't know.
Not a fan, I agree.
It's straight up, you know how like that cherry Airwick air freshener smells? That's what it tastes like.
Oh.
So yeah, so no, not even.
I know some people are also really sensitive to like cherry flavoring because they say it tastes like cough medicine, like depending on which one you have. Like I still, wild cherry Pepsi is still really, really good. I try to stay off the soda nowadays, but wild cherry Pepsi is good. This is also a heathenish thing to say around Southerners, but we're also on a Coke campus. Mr. Pibb or Pibb Extra is better than Dr. Pepper. There goes Preston. There goes his Preston's girlfriend is off camera too. She gave me the death stare as well, and I think Annie is also judging me from the other side of the camera. Yeah, everyone's just. She actually just looked. She's like, "What did I do? Why are you bringing me into this?" But no, I think I didn't get any judgment from you on that.
I'm from the north.
Ah, that's right.
I have no stake in this.
Now, so are you on the side? Pepsi is better than Coca-Cola.
I am, okay. But that's controversial.
They'll walk out of that way. Yeah.
I
can't say nothing. Both of them are all right, but I like the bite more of Coca-Cola. That's where I'm on my side. So yeah, it's yeah. Well, no, it's more strongly carbonated, like compared to Pepsi. At least in my opinion on that.
I've never noticed.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you just have soda connoisseur here potentially, but this turned in from Pop-Tart to soda discussion and everything. It turned into just an odd topic of what's your hot take in the snack and drink realm. But good first episode to recap us back and everything. I think especially when you try to get settled back into things, we try to get on the same level as the women's team in terms of settling back. I like to think we did this episode, but. Then there's Unfrosted Pop-Tart Lover over here. So it's a good first episode and excited to get back into the swing of things. What say you?
Baba Booey.
There's that. You got anything to add on to Preston's nonsense?
Absolutely nothing other than thank you guys so much for having me once again.
Yeah, we'll have Will Morrow rotating with us throughout the season. Hannah Alpern will hopefully be back next week. We'll try to get a guest on board for next week. We've got some good ideas in mind, and we will go from there. But again, be sure to stay tuned for our continued updates on the remote show as well as our future episodes throughout the rest of the semester. Should be a lot of fun as we continue to highlight all the hockey teams here on campus for the University of Alabama. For Preston McElhinney, Will Morrow, our producer Annie Sukalis, all the hardworking men and women that make this run so smoothly. I'm Spencer Thompson saying so long from Reese Pfeiffer Hall. Another episode of The Frozen Hour is in the books. Did you really just say slay to end it?
Keep that part in when you upload it.
I did.